Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Well, did you hear about the dad who went to his son's high school playoff game, and the dad had dressed as a referee, and he basically sort of walked up and down the sidelines having conversations with the crew actually working the game, and, well, you're not going to believe what happened. That's coming up later on in the hour. But first of all, let me ask you a very direct question. Do you feel that youth sports has become a playground for only those kids who come from an affluent family? The reason I ask is because I continue to get emails and notes from listeners who are quietly asking me whether we are reaching a point where only those households which can pay hundreds or even thousands of dollars a year can provide a pathway for their kids who want to continue to play sports. Now, look, I'm not talking about the $50 or $75 you have to pay to register your six-year-old for a local youth rec soccer or hoops league. No, I'm talking about the travel and club organizations, those programs which cost real money. For example, I received an email the other day from a dad down south where he was saying that his son had to pay just to try out for his high school baseball team, something like $150 as a tryout fee. If he doesn't make the team, well, the high school still keeps his money. Now, we know that in many public schools, school budgets don't cover athletic fees, and that's quietly, unfortunately, becoming more and more of the norm around the country. Or the sports booster club will hold a fundraiser, and as part of that fundraising activity, any youngster who wants to be a member of the high school team has to pledge a certain amount, usually in the hundreds of dollars. Now, high school boards are well aware that if a kid is a talented athlete these days, more and more of these kids don't even bother playing for their school team. They just remain with their club team outside of school. We know that. That's one of the main reasons why we see fewer and fewer kids playing sports in high school these days. And look, I know money is tight, especially if you have a son or daughter who really loves playing sports and they want to pursue that sport aggressively. I mean, I can recall paying for my son being on an elite travel hockey team. I mean, he had games every Saturday and Sunday from Labor Day to Easter. And, of course, I was paying for the gas, the motels, the food, even airfare in some cases, plus the thousands in fees for the coaches' salaries, ice time, and whatever. I mean, it was very, very expensive. And remember, I loved watching my son play hockey, but I have to tell you, it was very, very expensive in every way. And these days, that was like 10, 15 years ago. These days, it's going to become even worse. And I'm curious. I this is a trend that we all know is going on. I'm looking for solutions. I don't really know what's going to happen down the road if we're just going to, as I said many times on the program, we're just going to see high school varsity programs sort of devolve into just sort of like recreational or intramural teams, and the club mentality is going to take over. And, you know, if you're a mom or a dad and you have one youngster who plays, on a pay-for-play situation, and you have several kids who are good athletes in your family, this can really bankrupt the family budget. It's as simple as that. What's the solution? I don't know. I'm looking for some ideas from you this morning at 1-877-337-6666. Let's get into this. Let's start with our friend Ed over in Elizabeth. Ed, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing? I thought last week when you had Roman Oben on, that was outstanding.
Yeah, I got tremendous, tremendous feedback about Roman talking about what it was like to be a former NFL player himself and now going through the recruiting process, you know, with his son. That was a really good show. Thank you, Ed.
No, it was. Rick, I think one of the big issues is, you know, with the cost of our stuff, when you're trying to select tournaments to participate in, that's what's a good amount of the budget that's making travel teams have their costs go up every year. It's amazing how high these prices are. I'm working on our travel schedule on all our teams where I coach at, and I'm looking at these prices. It's like ridiculous, and I'm trying to figure out what's the best way for our travel teams to get noticed without putting a dent in the parents' pocket.
Well, Ed White, let's talk about it for a second. Let's get into the grassroots in this. When you're looking at a baseball tournament, first of all, you know, it's going to be, let's say, over a 4th of July weekend or something, or Memorial Day, whatever it might be. Why are they so expensive? I mean, is it just a situation where the hosts are trying to fatten their wallets, or are there real...
Well, it's very simple, Rick. Like you said, the hosts are trying to fatten their wallets. You look at Perfect Game. Their prices are going up every year. And then, here's the crazy part. They charge the parents to come watch their kids play.
Now, what do you mean by that? What do you mean they charge the parents?
So, like, let's say you went to a Perfect Game event, wherever it may be. The parents got to pay every time they go in to watch their son play.
Oh, you mean at the gate?
Yeah, it's like ridiculous. Now, like, for example, I run 2 showcase events, okay? And I try to make it as minimal as possible because, again, I got coaches coming in. You know, the way it is now in college, you know, to get coaches to come, you got to pay them. But they also work. You know, there's expenses that are involved, like, you know, feeding the coaches if they're going to travel, putting them up in hotels. And it was funny. I was working on it yesterday while I was sitting home. I'm making minimal money on this, but which I don't mind because besides my travel teams, I'm hoping the other 7 teams each week that I have at the showcase I have are going to get exposure in front of college coaches.
You know, the thing is, Ed, and as you just mentioned, there are a lot of different layers here. But obviously, this is, again, we all know this operates. These are for-profit operations. This is not like we're doing this out of the kindness of our heart for these kids. It costs real money. And as you said, that's just baseball. Obviously, if a kid plays other sports as well, you know, the parents begin to sort of say, well, what point do I stop paying for all this? And that's the essence. I mean, do you see any way around this? Is it part of all? Some people say, but why not getting just corporate sponsorship? Get the corporations who are involved in, you know, in athletics for kids, why don't they help out?
Well, again, you know, sometimes you try to reach out to these organizations, and they, a lot of times they don't return your email back. Unless they know you're an elite travel pro or whatever, then they may go out of their way and respond. But if you're not, they don't want to, you know, they really don't want to get involved.
Yeah, I hear you. That's where I think a lot of this is sort of heading towards, because we have to find a way to find somebody somewhere to subsidize these programs because, yeah, eventually the parents are going to say, I can't afford it, and I'm sorry, but no, you can't go and play on that elite program because we just don't have the money for it. It's simple as that.
Well, you know, it's amazing. Like I said, I run 2 showcases, and then I run a tournament named after a legendary scout, Ed Ford, from New Jersey.
Yeah.
In all my years, I have not raised the cost. I've kept it the same, and I've had, you know, teams coming back. And that's one of the reasons that I'm not trying to jack the cost up to make more money. And
yeah.
Again, I try to realize what teams have to pay. Even if teams put multiple teams in my event, I give them a discount or whatever. A lot of these events won't give discounts.
Well, it's going to have at some point. It's going to reach a boiling point where it's just going to go away, it's going to fall apart. I mean, and Ed, thank you as always for the insights. Greatly
have
appreciate.
A great day, Rick.
Thanks, Ed. You know, and as Ed points out, he's involved in this, but you know, it seems like everybody is looking at this way of some sort of buffet where you can just keep pulling in as much cash as you want, and obviously the money's coming out of the parents. Let's go to Paul over in Norwood. Hi, Paul. You're on the Fan.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm headed from New York up to Boston after the weekend. But my son is a freshman in college right now, so I just went through the decade plus of paying for town hockey, middle school hockey, lacrosse camp, elite hockey.
Yep.
The equipment, everything. Sure. And, you know, we're of modest means. I mean, his mom and I are both college graduates. We make a decent living. But for anybody else that I can imagine, it's a struggle financially to pay for all this. And it's really one big money-making machine if you look at it, you know, pretty quickly. A lot of these coaches in these leagues are using it as a showcase for themselves, really, to try to move up through the coaching ranks. My son's lacrosse program, his coach that runs that elite program, is now a head coach at the college level. And I think you see that happening. So I don't know how we defray the cost for the kids. It shouldn't be like this. I mean, I played CYO baseball growing up in Queens, and my parents might have had to write a check, but it was, you know, for a few bucks pay the umpires. That was it, and a glove.
Yep. Paul, I mean, you're going through this, you said, and there was a time not that long ago where, you know, yeah, you the mom and dads had to pay for a few bucks for CYO or something like that, but now it's just mushroomed. You know, a few months ago, I had Sean Gregory on the show, who's a journalist, and he'd written a big cover story for Time magazine. And he was saying the fact that youth sports in this country have now become a $15 billion industry. And it's all because of the fact that, I guess you would call them entrepreneurial coaches, have found a way to figure out, you know, I can make a buck on this by basically parlaying the parents' dreams for their kids to come to, you know, my travel team, to go to these tournaments, to go to showcases, in the grand pursuit of somehow these kids are going to go on to play college and get an athletic scholarship, when of course the odds are that they aren't. But again, the parents feel that sense of obligation that they have to do this, so they're taking that money into those athletic pursuits, when perhaps they should be saving that money either for their own retirement or for their kids' college education. But that's the mentality we're in today, and it's a real problem. Paul, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. I mean, it's Paul just went through this, and I know a lot of you are. I mean, that's reality. If you're a sports parent today, you know, by the time your kid is, if they have any flash of athletic talent, time they're 6, 7, 8 years old, you're going through this process, and it just seems like it's endless kind of bottomless pit of pay for this and pay for that. It's a problem. All right, let me take a pause. I want to get into this even more. I'm looking for solutions here. 1-877-337-6666. After Dave Uriam's update, I'll come right back and take your calls. Stay with me. And welcome back to the Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. We're talking this morning about pay for play and how it's just sort of spiraling out of control. If you are a sports parent today and your kid plays on a travel or club team, you know exactly what I'm talking about, the rising cost expenses of paying for everything from being on the team, which pays for the coach's salaries, for the fields or the hockey rinks or whatever, the cost of the officials, insurance, and obviously you have to pay to get to those games and take your kid on the road. It's really getting to be out of control. And this past week, HBO Sports did a piece about pay-for-play in America, and they didn't really break any new ground. They just basically reiterated what we already know, that this is getting to be out of control. We're looking for solutions here, and before the break, we were talking about maybe the time has come for corporations to come in and help defray some of the cost or to sponsor some of these teams. But then again, you know, we've seen how that's worked with, let's say, Adidas and college basketball. So that may be a non-starter as well, knowing of Adidas and their abilities to unfortunately influence kids' parents and with bribes and so on and so forth. So we're looking for ideas and answers here. Again, it wasn't that long ago, pay for play was not a concern. Kids played sports within their communities, and they played on their high school teams, and you know, maybe that isn't the ultimate solution here either, but something has to change, simple as that. Let's continue our calls. Let's go to Chris up in Suffern in Rockland County. Chris, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hey, Rick. First time, long time. How are you doing this morning?
Good, Chris. How are you?
Good. Just heading down to the Jets game. I wanted to talk to you. My son, he's about to head to Tufts to play football.
Yeah.
He got a scholarship. But I remember when I was a kid, we would sell, you know, Hershey bars and Skittles out of a box.
That's
right. That's how we'd make money.
Yes.
My solution, I think, now is it's just one thing, back to basics. They got all these turf fields and everything, which are nice, and maybe scientifically they have a lot of, use, but I think you go back to grass fields or you know, you don't have these big places where they're lifting weights.
Chris, we lost you there? We may have lost Chris. But the point is that obviously his solution is going back again to basics, back to little, you know, when the kids did fundraisers to, you know, raise money for their teams and whatever. Or as Chris was saying, you know, maybe we're getting too far along the line of basically, and I'm gathering what he was suggesting was, we're getting too professionalized with our kids at too young an age with all the various accoutrements that we give our kids when it comes to youth sports. Maybe that's correct. That's a possibility. Let's move on. Let's go to Rory up in Brookfield, Connecticut. Hey, Rory, you're on the Fan.
How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
Have four children. One of them is a competitive cheerleader, does a year-round program.
Uh-huh.
My wife drives about 40 minutes. There are other kids in the area that, you know, like happens in many situations for many parents that have these types of issues, especially financially.
Yep.
So we do a carpool, you know. There are a couple issues. Unfortunately, I have more kind of issues than solutions. But one of the things my wife and I were talking about the other day is actually the actual strain that it causes on our marriage, because, you know, we never get to see each other because my wife is either driving my daughter around to cheer competitions or every other weekend they're doing fundraisers. And unfortunately, one of our younger daughters also wants to get involved in cheer. And we just can't afford it. And I was a high school and college All-American swimmer myself. I work as a teacher currently.
Right.
And I also work as a coach. So one of the perspectives I have is I understand that, you know, coaches need to make money. Many of those coaches rely on that money in order to pay their families. So I do like the ideas of, possibly pulling corporations in to assist, to defray some of the costs. I do like the ideas of, the idea of, using fundraisers. And, I have had conversations with my daughter and even spoken to her. She is a freshman in high school right now about the fact that, you know, it does cause a huge strain on the family. It's a difficult conversation to have because I understand how important the cheerleading is to her.
It's an extraordinarily difficult conversation to have. If you have four children and, they all have their own dreams athletically, and as you said, Rory, I mean, you know, it's I don't care what kind of family or how successful or how affluent the family may be, there are limits. And not only that in terms of just the financial, but also just the time constraints. I mean, how many events can a mom or dad, you know, take to their kids to, you know, on a weekly basis? It's just, you just run out of time eventually. And it's, these are the kind of stresses and strains which, again, didn't exist 10, 15, 20 years ago. And yet now, to say this is sort of like uncharted territory, you got to figure out a way with your wife to make this happen. And you know, it's real hard. So, yeah, maybe corporations, instead of spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, let's say, on Super Bowl ads, maybe they go and they start spending money on local teams and situations where kids can actually afford to be there.
One of the very interesting things that my wife and I did is because, you know, once a month, sometimes twice a month, when the competition season really hits, we step back, we took a look at the credit cards, took a look at the competition fees, everything else, and we realized we are literally spending just under $20,000 a year for her to participate in cheer between hotel costs, and we kind of shook our heads and said, well, it's not too surprising, you know?
That's a lot of money. I mean...
It absolutely is.
But that's where you have to sort of say, you sit down with your wife and say, to what end is our child going to get an athletic scholarship, for cheer? I mean, is this money being well spent? Is there ways we can cut back without, you know, basically quelching her dreams? I mean,
yeah, she doesn't, interestingly enough, and we're struggling because, you know, the high school program it's just not quite as competitive.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, other parents can feel that same strain if their kids want to compete for a team that can offer better coaching, more elite services just in general. And my daughter is adamantly against, you know, and it's not that the high school team isn't as, it's just not as an advanced a program as what she needs.
Of course, and obviously she also feels that if she does that, there's a certain amount of peer pressure that, well, you know, sure, I'll do the high school, but I should be at a higher level. And again, that's all part of the issue, the psychology of this, too. Rory, I feel for you, my friend. It's difficult, and there aren't really any positive solutions we can turn to at this juncture. I just don't know what it's going to take, but something is going to have to change sooner or later, because you're like one of many hundreds of thousands of other parents in the same boat. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I thank you for your time. And, you know, like I said, I don't necessarily know that. I think it's really important to acknowledge the fact, too, because I'm one myself. And it's actually what, you know, having, you know, without sounding arrogant, having been a high school and college All-American swimmer, I mean, I'm you know, I get a decent, a pretty good salary for the competitive team that I coach for. Interestingly enough, my kids didn't choose swimming, which is kind of killer for me, because I could have gotten free. It could have gotten free competition fees with the team that I coach for. But
the point is the fact that you were an accomplished swimmer yourself. Obviously, you had competed at higher levels growing up. Certainly, that cost your parents some money to take you around and so on and so forth, but not to the extreme that you're going through this now with your own kids. It's just
something is really
out of whack and out of sync, and that's the problem. Rory, thank you again for sharing
this.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, you know, Rory is typical of so many sports parents today who obviously love sports. He was a very good swimmer. He's All-American. And now he's saddled with these unbelievable debts and concerns with his own kids, and he and his wife are trying to find trying to tread water so they can pay their bills, so the kids can pursue their dreams. To what end? That's the ultimate question. And at some point, you say, "Is this really going to be worth it in the long run?" I don't know. It's just, you know, everybody hears the numbers, and these are intelligent moms and dads, and they know that the odds are really stacked against their kids getting athletic scholarship or a full athletic scholarship, and yet they still feel obligated to let these kids keep playing at these elite levels. To what end? It's difficult. Let's go up to Yorktown. Joe, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hey, Rick, good morning. How are you?
Good, Joe.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My opinion, the answer to your question, and I've actually called in with the same idea before, is that I believe it always comes down to education. I believe that we have and I don't mean to say this in a demeaning way, but I think we have an uneducated consumer base where people buy into the catchy slogans that a lot of these clubs and travel teams have, the promises that they make, when yet, and you understand this because of the business that you're in, and I'm understanding more and more now, the things that make the super achievers, the super successful, the super recruitable, the blue chip kids who they are,
mm-hmm.
not where they play. Some of it's cultural. Some of it is just not by happenstance, but it has a lot to do with their birthdays. I just recently finished the book Outliers, that goes into this ad nauseum, and it was a very eye-opening experience for me. But it's educational. It lets people kind of know that when it comes down to things like club teams or travel teams, chances are statistically the birth dates of the kids that are on the team are closer to the cutoff dates on the other end of it. In other words, if the cutoff date's August 31st, these are the kids that are born in September, so that by the time the playing season ends, these are the oldest kids that potentially on the field.
I'm very familiar with Malcolm Gladwell's best-selling book from some years ago, Outliers. And, yes, he does go into detail about the fact that there have been these studies where, they say the kids who are the more elite players on the, let's say, in soccer or in hockey, they tend to be born the first 3 months of the year since they're older than and more physically mature than the kids born later in the year. Yeah, that's pretty well documented. And I will go so far as to say, Joe, I bet you there are parents out there who will be trying to figure out on the calendar when's the best time to conceive a child so that they end up being born in January, February, or March. I mean, that's the lunacy we're dealing with here. But all that being said, it still doesn't make any sense as the parents, you know, go along. And, Joe, thank you for the call this morning. You know, it doesn't make any sense for parents to spend that kind of money, unless they're fabulously wealthy, I guess, to sort of lead their kids to thinking their kids are going to be a superstar. Now, understand, I get the fact that being a sports parent myself, I understand how much fun it is to watch your kids play sports. But as I've said many, many times, at the end of the day, somebody has to be the adult here. Somebody has to be the grown-up and say, you know, let's keep this in perspective. We know that our kids, the vast, vast majority of them, are not going to be superstars. That once they finish their high school careers or finish with the last club team when they're 18, they're done. They're not going to play in college. They're not going to be good enough. It's as simple as that. I mean, it's not to throw a wet blanket on their dreams, but somebody has to sort of say, let's take this into consideration. And quite frankly, I will bet you, when you talk to your kids as they go through travel teams, By the time they're 15 or 16 or 17 years old, they can see for themselves that they're not going to be an elite player. You don't have to, you know, tell them that. They can see for themselves that, yeah, they're very good, but they're not at the level of superstardom. And that's what I'm getting at. I mean, I think that's something that people have to understand. Let's go to Brick and Tom. Tom, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Boy, I tell you what. Let me tell you, in my town, to start out with, you got to be lucky. We have two high schools. One of them is in a section of town where they don't have any problems, really, with the athletic field.
Yeah.
The side of town that I'm on, we have swamps for athletic fields.
Uh-huh.
We've been after the school board for years to do something with these fields, especially for baseball. And recently, we just had a bond issue get knocked down by 40 votes. And you know what it was for? It was to improve the security in our school systems. It got knocked down by 40 votes. What chance do you think anybody has in getting funding for school athletic fields?
Yeah, that, Tom,
right,
that's
down the bottom of the list.
That's
and
a problem.
Same with what you said when you started this.
Yeah.
About,
it's
area teams. It can destroy youth sports and the athletics in high school. Once that's the most important part of a kid's education was when he went to high school, he became part of something extracurricular. And he learned things from that. It's not there no more.
Tom, I hear you, and thank you for the call. I mean, yeah, it does start, if you're going to maintain a solid school board situation, a solid community, you're going to have to make sure the community gets out and passes those bonds to improve and enhance, obviously, athletic fields. Obviously, security in a school is essential these days, but you got to pass those. Otherwise, you're basically sort of turning your back on your student-athletes and saying, in effect, well, we don't have the money to make it good here for our sports teams, so you might as well go out and play in an outside team, in a club team, or travel team. That seems to be the way it is anyhow. The problem is it just gets so expensive so fast, it is a real concern, and that's what we're focusing on today. All right, let me take a time out. When I return, I'm going to tell you about this the situation out in Chicago where this dad dressed up as a high school football ref and what happened after that. Stay with me. This and Dave Deal will tell you about what's happening with the Giants and the Jets today. Again, that's 9 o'clock football Sunday. Don't forget Sports Psychology Night Wednesday, December 5th at the Fairlawn, New Jersey Rec Center. There'll be a book signing and discussion of everything on sports psychology. I'm looking forward to that presentation. Tickets are $20 for adults, $10 for teenagers and for senior citizens. You can purchase the tickets at the door at the Fairlawn Rec Center, or you can do it online. They go to Brown Paper Tickets. You find event number 366-1337. I'll repeat that. Event number 366-1337. Or you can call our friend Jack Smithlin at 201-693-2557. Again, 201-693-2557. Again, that's December 5th at the Fairlawn Rec Center. We're talking about sports psychology. By the way, you know you can track me down over to my website at AskCoachWolf.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, where I post my comments and thoughts about the shows and what we're talking about and topics here. Just go to Twitter, AskCoachWolf. Now, we haven't talked about the Sports Edge police blotter in some time, but this item caught my eye this week, and I had to share it with you. It's out of Chicago. Comes from the Associated Press account, so you know it's legit. The parents of players of a Chicago high school football team have filed a lawsuit claiming that a parent of an opposing player wore a referee's uniform and influenced the outcome of the game. The Simeon Alumni Association and parents of Simeon Career Academy players filed this lawsuit last week against the Illinois High School Association. Simeon had lost a class 7A quarterfinal game 34-27 to Nazareth Academy. And the lawsuit says that a parent of a Nazareth player, this dad apparently had worn a referee's uniform throughout the game. He was talking with the officiating crew at the start of the game. And apparently during the course of the event, he was walking up and down the sidelines. The father, his name is Richard Mercado. As I said, he was dressed out in the traditional black and white stripes and was making himself known throughout the course of the affair. But he was not, in fact, working the game. And he is a ref. He is, by the way, a football ref. But again, he was not assigned to this game between Nazareth Academy and Simeon Career Academy. Very strange, very odd, to say the least. Mercado even went on his Facebook page and wrote, quote, "I didn't make one bad call. I made sure the best team won." He also wrote on his Facebook page, "Nazareth needed me. I did what was needed to make sure Naz won." I don't understand any of this stuff, but it shows you this day and age that what parents will go to basically make a point and then basically to help make their kids' football team win in a playoff game. We'll see how this plays out in the court, but this is just extraordinary, and I had to share it with you. Okay, let me get back to our topic of the day about pay for play. What can we do to help poor parents today whose kids are good athletes, who want to play sports in a competitive way, but it's just getting more and more expensive if they're playing on a travel or a club team? Let's go to Keith in Oceanside. Keith, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. How are you today?
Good, Keith.
Okay, I think part of the problem is the high school coaches tried to, they got themselves in trouble because years ago, before everything got specialized, they would have their summer camps.
Yes.
You had to play there if you wanted to play for their high school team. If you had any aspirations of playing in any college, you wanted to be seen during the summer, you'd have to go to their camps, pay a couple $100. I mean, that's what started the whole process.
Perhaps.
So now,
yeah.
So now you have, the other coaches seen that. They said, we can make a living off of this. And then they went, it's been going a step further. When I was a kid, I know if you wanted to play for Archbishop Molloy, you had to go to the late Jack Kearns basketball camp. If you wanted to play baseball up at Hofstra, you had to go to Rich Martin's baseball camp over at the university.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was the predecessor to all this pay to play. So, like now, currently, I'm an amateur umpire for high school and baseball. So I've been doing it for about 15 years. Now there are so many specialized teams that it's not special no more, and it's actually watering down the product.
Right.
So these parents are paying for stuff that, baseball isn't what it used to be. Lacrosse isn't what it used to be. A lot of these sports, there's too much. I know in my town of Oceanside, there's two baseball teams, depending on what side of the road you live on. So the best third baseman may not be playing with the best shortstop. There's so much specialization that it's actually taking away from the product and not making it as good as it used to be.
Well, Keith, that's another interesting observation. You are correct. Because of the fact that anybody can put out a shingle and start their own travel or club team, the so-called elitism has all been diluted and watered down. There are so many of these teams now that, they're not the best teams. They're not comprised of the best players. All the best players are sprinkled around, or occasionally there's one superstar club or travel team that'll rise to the top. But everybody else, and that they all cost money, the parents pay the money willingly, and they think their kid is a star because they're doing well on the so-called travel team, which in fact is just an average collection of ball players, and that's misleading as well. I don't know how you get around that.
Well, I agree. I just, right now a lot of these travel teams, they're just collecting tuition from roster space. Is 5 through 12, and that's giving a little false hope to those players 5 through 12 that are on the back end of the roster. They might have 4 or 5 players that are really good, that are deservedly so on the team, and some of them might even be scholarships. Who knows? They might be paying partial payments, but they have to have that back end to subsidize the program.
Yeah.
So it's I don't see a quick fix. I really don't, because, whether it's Cub Scouts, whether it's baseball, whatever have you, if a parent doesn't get the answer that they want to hear, you know what they do? They just join another team.
Exactly what happens. If a parent feels that, I'm paying this money for my kid to be a starter on this so-called travel team and it's not working out, they just take the kid off that travel team and put him on a different travel team. Or they start their own travel team. I mean, there's no dearth of travel teams. And as you said, that sort of waters down, dilutes just how good those teams are. And yet the parents still think that's the best way, I guess, to ensure their kid gets a chance to be a star or to develop. But it doesn't necessarily mean they're getting any better. It just means they're having a chance to play. It's just expensive. That's what the bottom line is. Simple as that.
Just to go one step further, Rick. But even at the league level, they do it. This league might say this is the new product. That's the top tier. and then that'll be the top tier for 2 years, and then that league will introduce another league to say that now this is the top tier, and now the, you know, to compete with the alternate league. So they, you have multiple leagues, you have multiple tiers of what the top league is. It's a lot of confusion on the level, too many travel teams. You know, there's a lot of stuff in I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, as I said, the problem is there's a lot of confusion, because if you're a sports parent and you're going through this with your kid who's 10 or 12 or 14, you hear things from other neighbors, other parents, but you really don't know, because there is no sense of total organization or sort of independent body that ranks these teams and how good they are. You just don't know. So you take your chances, you pay your money. It does get very expensive. And you hope for the best, but there's no guarantee this is money that's well spent. And as one of the callers mentioned before, he had four kids. It just gets very, very expensive very, very rapidly. And to what end? That's the concern.
Yes, I agree. Listen, Rick, have a great weekend, and good job with the show, okay?
Thank you, Keith. Thank you for the call. And that's the concern here, friends. I mean, the fact is, because there is no sort of standardized, objective way of analyzing just how good these teams are, you don't know what you're paying for. And as a consequence, for a lot of moms and dads, they say, well, it must be, I heard this is a good program. A neighbor said it was good, or the coach is a good guy, or whatever. But you just don't know. And the fact is, maybe, again, a decade ago when there were fewer travel or club teams, maybe those were elite programs, but not so much. No, you just don't know anymore. And the same with the showcases. Well, this must be a great showcase, but you don't know because you haven't been through that yet, or you haven't seen it yet. All these things have one thing in common, though. They all cost a lot of money, and you have to really sort of do your homework as a mom or dad to know exactly whether or not this is money well spent. All right, let me take a time out. I'll be back with more.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
So I started the show asking for solutions, and what I'm hearing from the calls, and they've been great calls this morning, I do think that the only way to sort of somehow get out of the crushing debt that sports parents are going through today when their kids are playing on elite teams is to somehow find a way for the corporations that are involved in sports. And they, if they can find a way in their multi-million-dollar budgets to help finance these teams, that might be the way out. Again, I say that with a cautionary concern with companies like Adidas and the shenanigans they've been involved in with college basketball players. But there have to be other corporations that are trying to reach sports parents who pay for the equipment and pay for the travel and so on and so forth. It would make sense, off the top of my head, companies like McDonald's, Gatorade, Dick's Sporting Goods, Modell's, Nike, all these companies and more that could really help underwrite a lot of these travel programs so our kids could continue to pursue their dreams in sports at the elite level without bankrupting their parents. And this is the essence of pay for play. I don't know that that's going to happen soon, but it does make a lot of sense to make that happen in the years to come. It's as simple as that. Because I do think that is going to be ultimately the only solution. Otherwise, it's just going to become a case where of the haves against the have-nots when it comes to kids pursuing their dreams in sports. It's as simple as that. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Brian Rascona, the ball player. Please stick around for Football Sunday. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.